welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is WebSphere MQ's Shared Queuing in a Coupling Facility Environment. Today's presenters are Beverly Brown, Beverly Kingsley, Rick Armstrong, Blanche Ishida, Greg Woods, Mark Womack, and Vicente Suarez. Beverly Brown has been with WebSphere MQ Level 2 support since 1997 after 10 years with KIX support. She supports WebSphere MQ primarily on the ZOS platform. Beverly Kingsley is an experienced support software engineer with several years experience with IBM working with WebSphere MQ, CICS, and IMS. Rick Armstrong has worked with IBM customer support and services since 1989. Currently, he is a member of the ZOS WebSphere MQ support team. Blanche Ishida has worked with IBM customer support and services for the majority of her career. Currently, she is a member of the ZOS WebSphere MQ support team. Greg Woods joined the MQ for ZOS team in 2005. Greg has assisted customers with various MQ problems, ranging from MQ API problems to queue sharing group problems. The majority of Greg's career has been on ZOS products such as ISPF, Book Manager, Read MDS, Information Management, and now WebSphere MQ. Mark Womack joined the WebSphere MQ Level 2 team in 2004, working on key components of the product, including SSL, clustering, storage, and performance issues. Previously, Mark worked with the ComServer Level 2 team for both VTAM and TCP/IP. Vicente Suarez is a senior IT specialist working for IBM Hursley in the UK, with 8 years of experience as a specialist in WebSphere MQ and WebSphere Message Broker. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Greg Woods. You may begin.
Thank you, David. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining the Shared Queuing in a Coupling Facility Environment presentation. Today, our presentation will cover a range and assortment of shared queue scenarios and questions that were seen during the fourth quarter 2012 through first quarter 2013 timeframe. These issues or scenarios were collected during our analysis of customer concerns and functionality sent in through surveys and observed in PMR analysis. We will provide answers to each shared queue problem scenario and questions as we go. Due to time constraints for the presentation, we politely ask to hold all live questions until the question and answer section of the presentation. First, I'd like to cover a brief definition, history, and evolution of the shared queue in its existence in the MQ ZOS product. Shared queue is a type of local queue where messages can be accessed by one or more queue managers in a queue sharing group. Its messages are normally stored in a coupling facility list structure. Shared queue's impact dates back to early 2000 timeframe in an earlier version or release of MQ for ZOS, with the purpose of providing high availability access to messages in the event a queue manager goes down. Shared queues has evolved, starting with the allowance of persistent messages, along with recoverability of messages stored in shared queues with the creation of the cfstruct object and the commands backup cfstruct and recover cfstruct. Shared queues was enriched with the capability of storing messages the size of 100 megabytes, where any message greater than 63K will be stored in a DB2 table in the form of a blob. Today, there's been improvements made for retrieval of large messages with the new offloading capability to a linear VSAM dataset called Shared Message Dataset, or SMDS. Retrieving large messages from the SMDS offers a faster retrieval rate compared to its DB2 table alternative. Availability has been improved with the cfstruct cfconlos attribute, which describes whether loss of connection to an application structure is tolerated. Automatic recovery of application structures have been added also. So there's been some changes to shared queues over the years. With the changes are new questions and new issues. Hence, our presentation will navigate throughout the assortment of recently raised issues and provide answers. Our next presenter will be Beverly Brown.
Hi, everybody. This is Beverly Brown. Thank you for joining us. I'll start out by just saying we will make the assumption that you can follow all the detailed instructions in the information center to do the setup in DB2, XCF, and MQ to use e-sharing groups. However, I did want to point out a few things about some of the utilities that you would be using during that. So to start out, there is the CSQ5 PQSG utility on slide 4, and a couple of the verbs that we use there are add and remove. So, for instance, when you're first starting, you could use the add QSG verb to add the queue sharing groups to the DB2 table, and another verb might be add queue manager, which will add the queue manager to those tables you've just created and make it part of the queue sharing group. I wanted to point out here, if you'll notice in the text, some of that text is in blue, and what that means is that we have a hyperlink that might go to the information center or an APAR or a tech note. So if you have the PDF form in soft copy, you can click on that link and follow that to a wealth of additional information besides what is actually in the PDF. And then just wanted to point out the remove options that you might end up doing if you're removing the queue sharing group or a queue manager from it. So for instance, there's the remove QMGR verb, and to remove an individual queue manager, and then after you've done some additional steps, you may actually remove the queue sharing group with the remove QSG command. So let's move to slide 5, please. I wanted to point out one special case for the add QMGR verb, and that's in a disaster recovery scenario. What you might see is an error message, CSQ5010E, with non-zero return code for the IXC query macro, and then the queue manager abins with reason 00FOX5 0017. If you see this, what it means is at the disaster recovery site, you need to run the add queue manager command with the CSQ5 PQSG utility for every queue manager in the queue sharing group. There's some additional detail and background on that in TechNote 1452734. And some of that background talks about a couple of APARs that came along in version 6 and 700, or code that's actually in 701 and above base, to double check that return code on the IXC query macro before that code. If you got a non-zero return code, the code just went on, and there could be unexpected results. So I just wanted to, even though that's been a while, we've had about 3 PMRs in recent months that still stumbled over something similar to this. So if it's been a while since you've done disaster recovery checking, just be aware you might need to do that. Slide 6, please. So a few other verbs for the CSQ5 PQSG utility are migrate, force, and verify. And in the first bullet there, we have a hyperlink to the syntax for these verbs. Just wanted to point out there's the migrate DSG, or data sharing group, or migrate QSG, or queue sharing group. This verb does not actually do the migration, but it just validates that you are ready to do it. It means that you have the coexistence maintenance properly installed, and I'll expand on that a little bit more in a couple of foils. I did want to point out for this verb that for MQ710, you need APAR PM58871 to be sure that you're getting accurate results and not getting a false positive on this verb. Another verb you wouldn't use very often is force QMGR, but you might need to do that in doing some cleanup. Also, there's verify QSG that will validate the consistency of DB2 information. Again, pretty rare to need this, but once in a while, if there's been an abin that has interrupted processing, or perhaps DB2 tables were incorrectly restored from backup, things can get out of sync, and this verb will help you recognize that that has happened, and there are tech nets that can help you recover from that. Slide 7, please. I'll do my public service announcement for APARS in general. Like a good level 2 defect support rep, I want to make sure that everybody is aware of this. We have a tech doc, number 7006625, that has links to fix lists for each release and also a link to migration-related fixes. And for the version-specific fix list, there are various columns with the APAR, PTF, problem description. There are also, I wanted to point out, a column to draw attention to high impact or pervasive, or what we call hyper fixes. And there is also a CSAVE file that is a spreadsheet that where you can see which sort on various columns and maybe see which fixes are included on a particular RSU level, information like that. So moving on to slide 8, I wanted to point out a couple of utilities that the hold beta for that maintenance might instruct you to run. So one of those is CSQ45BPL, and that's for binding plans that are used by WebSphere MQ. Another is CSQ45GEX to grant authority to those plans. Now, those two utilities are run at installation and also may be run after some MQ maintenance if a new plan needed to be added. However, I will point out that there is now added by maintenance a new utility, CSQ45BPK, bind DB2 packages, that will simplify maintenance of these plans. They were added by PM60589 for MQ710 and PM65422 for 701. And more information about that utility is found in TechNote 164.3097. And what this bind package takes advantage of is that we now use the DB2 pre-compile option version auto, and it causes us to use a DBRM consistency token that will just allow us to make updates to the plans without having to create a new plan. That is very helpful. On to slide 9. So how do you migrate your queue sharing group? Again, there's a lot of good information in the Information Center, but I will refer you to TechNote 1299323 that summarizes it some, gives you some pointers to the Information Center and a couple of other tech notes that can just help consolidate that information for you. And I wanted to highlight that one of the big requirements is that you need to apply coexistence fixes to the version that you're migrating from. And the whole data for that will ask you to run the updated version of the CSQ45BPL and GEX jobs. Preferably you would run that at a lightly loaded time to avoid DB2 lock. And then very important, you must restart each queue manager at the old release with this maintenance on before you migrate any of them to the new release. And that is part of what that CSQ5PQSG migrate command is intended to do, is to validate that those steps have been done correctly and that you're ready to go. Now, this migration is designed so that you don't need to have an outage of the entire queue sharing group at the same time. You can do rolling updates and restarts so that you will always have a queue manager at least available. And, of course, this means that you can have a queue sharing group consisting of queue managers at multiple releases. Moving on to slide 10, I'll shift gears slightly, and I'll point out shared queues in a cluster. So with this, users in the network, which may even be somebody in a different company that you share information and messages with, see the shared queue as being hosted by each queue manager within the queue sharing group. the usual cluster workload algorithm is used. And the main thing I wanted to point out is that because of this workload algorithm, the messages could actually go out on a cluster channel rather than directly to the shared queue. So if you want to force all of the messages directly to the shared queue, if you're doing an MQ put that is on a member of the QSG, then you can use the cluster workload use queue attribute and set it to local. Certainly that wouldn't work if the put is being done outside the queue sharing group, but if you are doing the put from within it, that will make it more better performance on that. So now I'll hand over to Blanche Ishida. Thank you.
Okay, Beverly, thank you. Let's go to slide 11. I'm just going to go through a few scenarios that we've come up with reviewing some problem records. So what is the display SMDSCon return with the message CSQMQ297I? So if you were issuing the display command to check your status or availability, what it requires is the command only works if the structure is currently connected, and by that it means that it's some of the shared queues are allocated to that structure have already been opened. So you might want to check that if you see message CSQMQ297I when you issue the display command. We go to slide 12. In slide 12, you'll see what are some guidelines for shared queues. And rather than going through each one of these, serializing your applications that are not suitable for use with shared queues, each one of these items is actually, as Beverly said, a link to an item within the information center. So these are some of the things that you would want to review as you are setting up your shared queues and things to take into consideration. So again, serializing your applications that aren't suitable for use with shared queues, deciding whether to use share non-application queues, and how do you migrate your existing applications to use shared queues, influence workload distribution with shared queues, shared queue recovery, shared queues and queue depth events, and then planning your coupling facility and offload storage environment. Go to slide 13. Why does the queue manager abend with 5-Charlie-6, reason 00-Charlie-5-11-Charlie-easy? And basically, the admin structure is full. And in this instance, the application was putting thousands of messages before committing, filling up the admin structure. And looking at the actual syslog, there was message IXC585EASY structure, and then your queue sharing group, CSQ admin, and the coupling facility was issued is at or above structure full monitoring threshold. So in this instance, you would issue more frequent commits, commit more frequently. And also in a future slide, we'll be discussing the CF sizer, where you can increase the size of the structure. Okay. Slide 14, please. Why does the master fail with ABIN system 5-Charlie-6, reason 00-Charlie-5-11-Charlie-8? And this ABIN occurred because of a lost connection to the coupling facility. Now, this DOC APAR PK34486 is a version 6 APAR. It still applies to version 7, but the version 7 info center is updated in the section or topic in the version 7 info center is the shared queue recovery. If we go to slide 15, please. Why is MQRC 2192 MQRC storage medium full return when writing to a shared queue? And I reference tech note 1144275. And in that tech note, it actually it has under resolving the problems, there's actual steps that you can take to increase, and you would basically verify the structure name, display the CF status, and then you would look and verify ENTS max and ENTS use values to see if they're large enough. And those values relate to the actual number of CF list entries. And there's a command in the tech note. If you need to increase those values, you can issue a set XCF command, a set XCF start, and alter the structure name equals the structure name and the new size that you need. So, in slide 16, okay, why is CSQJ 104 issued? And you have a CSQJ 104 easy for error status 00000000A. And that's saying the received error from a locate, and it's looking for an archive log, and you're not sure why it's looking for the archive log, and but the archive log, you know, has already been deleted. And so what has happened here is that, again, there was no backup CF struct, or there were no backups. And so you'd see in the log, along with this, when you search back in the log, you'll see CSQE041E message structure, you know, XXX backup is more than a day old. And so in that case, since there was no backup, and when we were doing recovery, we needed to information from a previous log. So you would just issue, you could issue a backup CF struct with the structure name, and, you know, for one of the queue managers in the queue sharing group, and that will help with the recovery. Now, also, I don't have it here, but there are two APARs, a PM61150, where this message is actually, you know, issued, and there is an error. So it would be the queue manager at shutdown was seeing the same message. And there's just the brand new APAR, PM95247, was just open on 8/16. But in that case, the CSQJ 104 easy, prior to that message being issued, there was an actual ABAND of 5Charlie600Dog10345. So the CSQJ 104 easy, I mean, there are multiple reasons, but one of them is the not having a backup of the CF struct. Well, I'll go ahead and turn over to Rick Armstrong.
Thanks, Blanche. If we go to slide 17. Again, I'd like to just repeat what Greg said at the beginning, that, you know, the problems and scenarios that we're going over here are fairly recent, end of last year, beginning of this year, problems that we've seen regularly, or often, I guess I should say. And it's funny, if you look back through history, some of the problems are the ones we see over and over again. I'm sure if you support products in your for your employer, you see, you know, sometimes the same problems over and over again. And that's why we think it's important to this technical exchange, these particular items, because they are pervasive, meaning that we see them over and over again fairly regularly. Anyway, on to slide 17. What I receive a MQ return code 2048, which is the MQ return code, persistent not allowed return code. One thing you have to make sure, if you're putting persistent messages to a queue, a shared queue on a coupling facility, that that structure is defined with recovery equals recovery yes. And again, that reference there in the information center, or that the words information center is a hot link to a particular section in the information center that defines that. So if you're not running with recovery yes for the structure, then you can only use non-persistent messages in those queues defined on that structure. Slide 18, please. Now, the question that we get often, or we run into, is how often should I back up my coupling facility structures? We recommend it every hour. Again, that is just a recommendation from us. You might want to do it more often. You might not want to do it as often. But keep in mind, the less often that you do it, the more time it may take to recover that structure, because it has to go back further in the logs to get the information. So, again, we recommend it every hour, or IBM recommends it every hour. but you need to decide and do that based on your requirements in your at your site. But and keep in mind also that you can perform it on a single queue manager in the queue sharing group, or you can spread it out over multiple queue managers within the queue sharing group. Slide 19, please. How do I recover the CSQ sysapple structure when it's in a failed state? And the, that first bullet there, the CSQ easy 035 easy, is an example of a message that you might see. If you issue the recover CF struct with a CSQ sysname and type normal, that will recover the structure. However, all the archive logs need to be available to the queue manager. And that's all well and good and works just dandy. But if you don't have the archive logs, there's another option, the type purge, that you can use. The problem with that, it's a restricted parameter, the type purge, and requires contact with us to be able to give you the correct information you need to issue that. And it's because the CSQ sysapple structure has information about the X8 group UR records that can cause some data integrity problems if it's just purged willy-nilly. And so that's why we require that you contact us, get information, and we verify with you that you understand the implications if you do use the purge option. Slide 20, please. Why won't my application structure reconnect? And what you see is a CSQ easy 005i 006i, and essentially what it's saying, it can be an expected result if you're using a backup CF struct command and there's no applications connecting to a queue manager that uses any of the queues in the structure, meaning that if there are queues on the structure that no application is accessing, it may not reconnect. But as soon as you put a message to a queue and the queue becomes active, then the structure will connect again. And there's a reference for another techno that explains that in pretty good detail, which is 1431560. 22, please. Yeah. Why did I receive the CSQ 5005 easy message with the reason codes 00FOX50029? Well, Beverly kind of beat this drum just a minute ago, and once I tell you the reason, once you see the reason why, oh, yeah, do that. The problem is, you know, we see this over and over again, that the queues have the toleration or the coexistent PTFs applied, but the old queue managers are never restarted with that maintenance applied. And this could be caused by an inactive queue manager in the queue sharing group, meaning that there has been a queue manager in the queue sharing group for months or maybe years that you forgot about, and it's there, but it hasn't been had maintenance applied to it, hasn't been restarted or whatever. And that's usually the reason that we see. But it's important that the coexistent PTFs are applied and then the queue manager is restarted. Slide 22, please. This is a question that we see often. Why am I getting applications not balanced across the queue managers in the queue sharing group? It's pretty simple. Queue sharing groups are not intended for load balancing. That's more a function of clustering. And the reason what happens is that the putting queue managers for precedence over the queue sharing group when this transfer notification is sent out from the coupling facility to the queue managers, the putting a queue manager gets this information first, and if it's able to, it will also process the in-queue get quicker than the other queue managers in the group. We have taken a requirement to look at this for load balancing across queue managers in the queue sharing group. So if you're interested in that, you can email one of us in our email address at the beginning of this presentation, and we'll be happy to share that with you. Slide 23, please. Why is my queue manager Adbend 5 Charlie 6 with a reason code of 00 Charlie 5 101 able when it starts? It's a principal answer. Sometimes not easy to find. Queue manager and the queue sharing group are assigned the same queue manager ID, and again, this could be caused by an old configuration where you have a queue manager's residual queue manager left over in your queue sharing group from a long time ago, and you end up with duplicate names. If we go to slide 24, we'll see an example of how you can check this. If you look at the second bullet there, it says use display group, and the number beside of the name is the queue manager ID. If you see if you have duplicates there, you can use the CSQ5P QSG to remove, force the queue manager, and then to add, use the same utility to add it back in. It's fairly simple, but it's required to do. I will turn this over now to Beverly Kingsley. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Let's go to slide 25. Another common question is, why can't my CF level alter to 5? In order to alter the CF level to 5, all the queue managers in the queue sharing group should be version 7.1 or greater, and OP mode on the queue manager attribute set to new funk 7.1.0 as shown on the slide here in the example. If these conditions are not met, message CSQY334EASY will be issued stating CF level 5 not allowed, restricted functionality when you try to alter the CF level to 5. Next slide, 26, please. This slide, this question should be, why did the master append 5 Charlie 6 reason 00 easy 2 000 Baker? It should not be the chain. It should be the master. This reason code means a request to get storage was unsuccessful, which is a storage shortage. In a queue sharing group environment, a common reason is due to a buildup of the DB2 XCF work blocks. These are 4K blocks used to queue requests from XCF to MQ. So some possible reasons for this built-up could be problems in the sysplex, an application connected to the queue sharing group opening and closing the queue with incorrect open options. So each time the queue closes, a notification is sent to each queue manager in the queue sharing group, thus contributing to this DB2 XCF work blocks built up. So in order to determine the root cause of the storage shortage, you need to send us the 5 Charlie 6 dump. Next slide, 27. What's the minimum size do I use for the application structure? We recommend that you use the CF sizer to calculate the size of the application structure. It is not an MQ tool. It is provided by the coupling facility. The structure space itself contains both MQ and CF control data and is managed by the coupling facility. So each time the CF level is upgraded or changed, we recommend you use the CF sizer as it decides the size of the structure. You should specify the allow or to alter yes and the list structure definition in the CFRM policy to allow cross-system extended services to automatically alter the size and ratio attributes of the structure as needed. Next slide, 28. If you have a shared queue problem, to begin with, use this link, tech note number 1177414, to collect the documentation we require to look into it. I will now turn the presentation over to Greg Woods. Greg?
Thank you, Beverly. Slide 29, please. Can shared message data sets be used in place of DB2, but using the same queue sharing group name? SMDS is not a total replacement for DB2, since Western MQ still uses internal DB2 tables for managing shared objects in a queue sharing group. An SMDS data set, which is VSAM, is an alternative to DB2 for offloading large or small messages from the application structure. Switching from DB2 to SMDS can occur while retrieving existing messages. What this is saying is that if the offload technique is changed from SMDS to DD2 or vice versa, then all new large messages will be written using the new method, but any existing large messages can still be retrieved using the old technique while still under the same Q-sharing group name. Slide 30. In continuance with can SMDS be used in place of DB2, I'd like to mention some infrastructure that has to be in place, and some of this has already been said, to exploit the offloading of the new offloading capabilities. The queue sharing group needs to be built at a 710 level, or all the queue managers in the queue sharing group should be at a 710 command level. Also, the op mode new func has to be specified for each of the queue managers. The offload attribute for the define cf struct command should be utilized to trigger the offloading of messages to either SMDS, BSAM dataset, or a DD2 table. Offload rules should also be specified, and offload rules consist of the structure usage percentage and the message size. These settings control when messages are offloaded. MQ supplies default values for these offload rule keywords, and these default values were chosen to increase the effective coupling facility structure capacity. Performance gains are noticed with large 64K messages when they're offloaded to the SMDS and have a better transaction rate than its alternative, the DB2 table. And want to mention that the CF struct needs to be at a CF level 5 for initiating SMDS offloads and utilizing the new offload message controls. Slide 31, please. How to resolve the message CSQE-137E, DB2, and CF is out of sync. CSQ-UZAP is a specialized tool that has the functionality to operate against coupling facility list structures and DB2 tables. CSQ-UZAP array DB2 is ran against the DB2 tables to parse the list header arrays, and it selects array entries with the action bit turned on. This output was received and reviewed by our change team in level 3 people, and we in turn suggested to the customer to run the CSQ USAP with the Dell DB2 keyword to remove entries from the MQ DB2 table, along with the ZAP structure keyword to remove entries from the coupling facility structure. The CSQ USAP is, again, a specialized tool and is undocumented and should only be utilized under the guidance of IBM Level 2, Level 3. Slide 32, please. Explain why the display group command may cause CPU utilization to increase. Display group command initiates cleanup for large messages. When a display group command is issued, the queue manager checks if there has not been a cleanup in the last 10 minutes. It will initiate a cleanup. And this is a cleanup for large orphan messages. Slide 33, please. Attempts to offload small messages to SMDS fail. Why? Messages under 140 bytes will remain in the coupling facility structure and stored with the message control information. No offloads will occur for these small messages. So what happens is that normally when a large message is offloaded to the shared message data set, there are footprints that are still left in the coupling facility. And if the message is small enough, such as 140 bytes or lower, the actual message will be stored in the footprints or message control information that's left on the coupling facility structure. Now I'll turn over to the next presenter, Mark Womack.
All right, thanks a lot, Greg. If we could go to slide 34. Okay, and so we're getting close to the end, five slides left. I'm going to basically review some unexpected behaviors that some users experienced while using Q-sharing groups. And then we'll talk a little bit about error recovery in a Q-sharing group referencing structures that fail and loss of connectivity to those structures. So this slide talks about a Q-manager restarting into the Q-sharing group, and he fails with a Charlie 5-1-176, which turns out to be a generic reason code, and basically it's a fall-through case for MQ where we didn't determine there was some specific error that we were aware of, so we just decided, well, let's put out this generic reason code to the user. And when we issue this reason code, it's because we've done some sort of a call to the SysPlex services, also known as XES, but XES has determined that whatever call we issued to them was not logical, or we shouldn't have been issuing it to them, and so they come back to us saying, we don't know what you want. You've logically sent us a call that shouldn't have been sent. You need to generate some sort of an error indication to the user. So this reason code can mean that SysPlex Services has a logic error sometimes, but it can also mean we've done something invalid within our own code. So for this reason, it's important to make sure that all the MQ code that relates to the coupling facility, which we call the coupling facility manager, is at a fairly recent current maintenance level. So that's one of the reasons I included the 3A PARs that you see at the bottom of the slide here. If MQ is working properly, these error, unexpected errors that you see coming back here would probably be SysPlex Services' fault. But in this case, MQ had actually issued those calls to this to XES out of turn. If you read the text of each of the APARs, it kind of details what the errors were. These APARs currently are still open. They're slated to, targeted to close at the end of September, so they're not visible on the web yet. But once they do close, somewhere near the second half of September, you'll be able to locate them and pull down the PTFs once those also eventually close. In any case, when you start to see any kind of return code like a Charlie 5-1-176, the CF should also be checked with due diligence to make sure that it's not the source of the problem. If we could go to slide 35, I'd appreciate it. Okay, this is a case here where the user reported that they weren't able to back up their CF structure. They took a look at the structure and didn't notice that it was in a failed state, so it didn't make any sense why the backup didn't work. We began to interrogate the problem and found out that the SMDS data sets actually were the source of the problem. The customer was able to issue the display SMDS.com, which gives information about this queue manager's knowledge of the connection to the SMDS data set, and it determined that the state of that connection was not good, and so the backup failed for that user. But once again, the issuance of this message, the CSQE106E, is also a fall-through case for MQ. So in that case, you also have to take a look at the reason code that's generated when the message comes out to find out, is it a problem within the SysPlex that's causing a backup to fail, or is it a problem within MQ? Some of the return codes that MQ internally generates with this message weren't documented previously. So we went ahead and created PM82597 to document the reasons that can come back with this message, and as well the information center associated with MQ was updated to include that documentation. If you take a look at some of the applets you can get back when you issue the display SMDS, it indicates the open mode associated with the data set. It indicates the status of that data set. It indicates if the data set is available, and it indicates if the data set's been configured to allow data expansion for itself. One point about open mode, when a queue manager or a set of queue managers has a set of data sets that they're using for shared messages, only the queue manager that owns that data set is the one that will have it open for write. The rest of the queue managers that access that data set will only be able to read from it. And you'll note that when you do your display SMDS.com, that will be the status that will be returned. One guy having write access and the rest only in read mode. Lastly, on this slide, you have display CF status type SMDS, and that will basically just display information about the shared message data set if you need to interrogate that. All right, if we move to slide 36, that would be great. And here, this was a case where a user was issuing an alter command. So fairly typical alter command, alter your local queue. But in this case, they were doing it against a queue with a queue sharing group disposition of shared, and that made all the difference in the world. The DOG 44004 reason code really just means that you issued a command, and somehow when MQ checked for the validness of that command, some of the parameters within the command conflicted with each other. So in this specific command, by design, it's not allowed that a change be made to the value of CF struct if you're altering a local queue where the queue sharing group disposition is set to shared, which was the case here. So that's just a no-no, and the only thing you can do if you want to change the value for CF struct is delete the queue and redefine it over again, all over again. Slide 37, please. Okay, so what does MQ do in a queue sharing group failure? And this is very well documented in the Information Center. In fact, I'm going to refer most folks to go back to the Information Center. There's a fairly large topic in the IC, as we call it, that will pretty much cover any scenario you might run across. This slide is really a partner to the next slide that we'll move to in a little bit, involving queue sharing groups, failures within the CF, and the like. So on this slide, I'm just touching on the point that if you do see a problem in the queue sharing group, if you see a structure failure, if you see a connection failure to a structure in the CF, level two is going to ask you, you know, to report to us the specific error messages that you receive. We're going to be very interested in the levels of code that you're running. Are all the queue managers still the same level, or is everybody 7.1, or are some 7.01? Because these differences in levels will determine how each of the queue managers, or even all of the queue managers in the queue sharing group, react to the error. We're also going to want to know things like, did DB2 experience any errors? Do you have the DB2 log available? Because we're going to want to check for its availability. Excuse me. And we're also going to want to know, you know, if the queue manager, for instance, terminates with the Charlie 510 Abel Baker, this will indicate to us that either the structure failed or the queue manager itself lost the connectivity to the structure. And by the way, one interesting point is with the Charlie 510 Abel Baker failure. This can also occur if you've assigned a queue manager an insufficient amount of private storage. So you can get the same exact error, but for totally different reasons. And that's one of the reasons Level 2 will try to interrogate as much view about the problem as possible to get a good feel for it. Second bullet down, we talk about CF con loss. This can be defined in two spots. It can be defined as a CF struct attribute when you do define CF struct, but also as a queue manager attribute. So you can define it as with the values of as queue manager, terminate, or tolerate, telling the queue manager how to handle loss of connectivity to the CF struct. As I said, it's also a queue manager attribute. So if you set as queue manager as your value on your CF struct definition, then the setting that's provided in the queue manager attribute will override what's defined on the CF struct statement. The value of tolerate is only supported with CF level 5, and that's important for us. If you're running 7.1 queue managers, that's the only time you can have CF level 5 set. And as well, that means the command level of the queue managers has to be 7.10 or higher, that's just a requirement. Associated with the toleration of the CF struct failure is also the rec auto automatic recovery attribute, which you put on the CF struct definition, and I think somebody else also mentioned that earlier in the slide. And that just really controls if the structure and the associated shared message data sets will automatically be recovered if they need to be. And if memory serves, I believe that by default we do not recover automatically. So if you do want that function enabled, you do need to set the rec auto value correctly. In the event of loss of connectivity to a structure, you can expect to see cases where one queue manager in the queue sharing group can admin when it loses connectivity to the structure, for instance, to the admin structure. But you might notice that other queue managers in the queue sharing group do not fail. And this could seem odd to somebody. Well, why didn't they all fall out when the first queue manager fell out? And this can be because you may have your queue manager on different LPARs, or they may use a different path to the CF, to this coupling facility. And if they do, then they'll still have connectivity to those structures, and you won't see the same failure across the board for everybody in the queue sharing group. Now, some folks like to test their CFs in order to see if they run into an error condition, you know, what actually can happen, how can they recover from it, can they recover from it in the first place. So for the purposes of testing, IBM, not MQ per se, but IBM in general, provides two tools that you can use. One that does come out of NQ and it's new for 7.1 only is the reset CF struct action fail command, which will allow you to specify the application structure which you wish to put into a failed state. And also that another tool that's been available for years is the inject the error tool, which is available from the IBM system folks, and you can get that one if you just Google for it. That tool as well will simulate a failure of a structure in the Q sharing group. However, that tool, we only recommend that you run it in a test environment. If you run it in a production environment, it's perhaps not a good idea. I'll leave it at that. Let me move to slide number 38, and I think that's our last production slide. Okay, so this kind of continues the whole topic of failures in a CF and what NQ does. Once again, the Information Center has the best documentation on this, and the name of that topic is coupling facility and structured failures. So I'm just going to hit some of the high points. I believe these are documented in the system commands book, the very path, and the config chip it offline commands help to simulate CF outage so that you can get a feel for what a loss of connectivity to the structure would be like when you vary those channel paths offline. And for MQ, we really only recognize two types of failures in a Q-sharing group. We recognize a structure failure, and we recognize a loss of connectivity to the structure. So to help mitigate failures like this, we recommend in our documentation, and I think probably the general red books that you can get out there as well, we recommend use of the system managed duplexing, which will allow MQ to continue processing if only a single instance of a structure fails. If both instances happen to fail, then we'll just treat it as if it was a single failure without system managed duplexing in place, and you'll get the same end result as if you didn't have any error recovery in place. But we wanted to try to help remove a single point of contact failure, and so we recommend that system managed duplexing be put in place. For 7.1 MQ, if the admin structure fails, MQ will automatically rebuild it without the queue manager terminating. Queue managers that are not active at the time of the failure will actually get their admin structure entries rebuilt for them so they don't have to be there. But if it turns out that in your queue sharing group, no queue managers are active when the admin structure fails, then you're going to want to restart queue managers so that they can start to rebuild their own entries back. If you want full detail of the handling of admin and application structures, the Info Center, like I said, has more detail. In fact, there's too much detail for us to cover here in a few hours, so we'll recommend that you review that. And we'll go to slide 39, do a quick synopsis, and then I'll return back to David. So a lot of the things we covered today, and one of the key points to remove single points of failures is that Q-sharing groups provide a really high level of availability on the ZOS platform only. We also recommend you ensure that your CF level is set properly. If you want to use the new functions that are provided through CF level 5, everybody's got to be at command level 7.1.0. Everybody has to be 7.1, and CF level 5 can then be set. As Greg mentioned, SMDS offload outperforms DB2, hands down, no doubt about it. Disaster recovery procedures for Q-sharing group have to be planned out, as Beverly mentioned earlier. You also want to make sure you take care to properly bind your DB2 plans. If you don't, you'll get the strange error messages from DB2 where you won't be able to access entries in the tables correctly. Blanche mentioned CF Sizer helps you to properly size your structures. Not an MQ tool, but it is available out there, and it's very useful. You want to make sure you perform backups in the Q sharing group regularly. Rick mentioned this piece here because we want to make sure that when you do want to have recovery take place, that it doesn't take an extremely long time or that we have to go back to the archives to get information from the backups. Keep maintenance in the queue managers in the queue sharing group at a current level. This eliminates a lot of problems as you migrate. Make sure you have the right coexistence PTFs. Make sure you have the right fallback PTFs. Make sure you do that last restart at the previous level so that all the queue sharing group information is migrated properly. And finally, I think Greg had mentioned how the offload rules are documented. They can be confusing sometimes, but we have tech notes out there that help you along the path. And hopefully, if there are any holes folks find out there, please let us know. Please email us, and we'll get it fixed. And David, that's all I've got. I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Beverly and Beverly, Rick, Blanche, Greg, Mark, and Vicente for a great presentation. Slide number 41 has some additional WebSphere product resources that we think you may find useful. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there's a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Mike Sokolik of BNY Mellon.
Great. I have actually a few questions. We'll start out the first one. I have slide numbers that I'm going to refer to. Slide number 22, which discusses that coupling facility shared queues are not currently intended for load balancing, whereas clustering is. Is that statement made in reference to trigger-first coupling facility shared queues, as opposed to having, let's call it, long-running CICS message receivers in multiple CICS regions on different LPARs? And note, in our testing that we've done in the TestPlex environments here at Pershing, is that we have four TestPlex environments, and three out of the four TestPlex environments showed fairly good receive balancing on trigger-first coupling facility shared queues. One of the four environments, which we've never got down to the bottom of it, shows a very poor load balancing, where one of the LPARs, one of the CICS regions, only received 5% of the messages. They should have received about 33% of them. So, again, the basic question here is the idea of coupling facility shared queues not currently intending for load balancing, as presented in slide number 22, is that specifically regarding trigger-first queues only? Thank you.
So, yes, I guess you summed up the question. I'll just repeat it for everybody. Really, the question is, does triggering whatever, you know, with first on a queue have anything to do with load balancing in a queue sharing group, is how the question boils down?
Excuse me?
I'm just restating the question. I know Vincente is on the line from Level 3. He may have some input on that.
I think the question here was... having footers in different connected to different queue managers in the queue sharing group, and the getters around the queue sharing group getting the same share of the load, and because of the reasons explained, this might not happen always. Triggering, that's another. The way the trigger is action that also doesn't distribute the messages.
Well, actually, for the trigger first configuration that's being used here at the system level is that there's a coupling facility shared queue that receives the system trigger message, and there's a CKTI in each one of the CICS regions that receives the system trigger message, which then locally in that CICS region will start off the application level CICS TRAN ID. So the deepest that perspective that I can give regarding why that there was not any balancing, I would describe it as very minimal balancing in one of the regions, is because in that particular environment, the trigger first messages, system level messages through the init queue to the CKTI receivers, was being received primarily by the CKTI receiver in one or two of the CICS regions. The third CICS region in the other LPAR was receiving hardly any of the system level init messages. But that's actually not more to the core of my question. The core of my question is for load balancing purposes through coupling facility shared queues, if there were long-running, non-triggered CICS receivers in CICS regions on multiple LPARs, would there be the expectation of load balancing? I think that there would, and I just want to get some input from the subject matter experts at IBM as to that that would legitimately be a true load balancing situation with long-running receivers as opposed to trigger first.
The slide, the question, what was presented in the slide is if you have a receiver and a putter in the same queue manager, that receiver will receive a large share of the messages.
Right, right. I understand that. Let's say, for instance, we have a putter in queue manager number one, and we have receivers in queue manager number one and queue manager number seven, let's say, for instance. Well, the receivers and they're long-running receivers, and the long-running receiver in queue manager number one, I'm clearly hearing that the receiver in queue manager one will be at a priority, at a preference for receiving the messages put by a putter in queue manager one. But as that receiver in queue manager one has received a message and passes it on to a piece of business logic, when then the business logic has to spend X amount of fractional seconds to go through its unit of work, we then have another message put by queue manager number one, and we have a queue manager number seven long-running receiver that has not yet received a message. Wouldn't that queue manager number seven receiver then receive that message rather quickly, nearly immediately, because the queue manager number one receiver is busy waiting on a response back from a piece of business logic?
As long as the receiver in queue manager one doesn't do the get immediately.
Right, yeah, it's not going to do the get immediately because he's waiting on a response coming back from a piece of business logic.
Then you should expect that the other queue manager pick up the other messages.
Essentially immediately, that's what I'm wondering about.
The other queue managers have to receive a signal that what is called here this list transaction notification. And that one is not as immediate as it happens in a local queue manager where the putter is. So it should be fairly fast.
Right, it's essentially immediately.
Yes.
No measurable delay of any concern in terms of that.
No, it's all action by the XCS SysFlex software.
Okay. All right, thank you for that answer. Am I allowed to ask more questions, or do we want to allow others to ask questions?
Feel free. I mean, it's just, you know.
Okay, great. Thank you. On slide number 13, there was a presentation that said that thousands of MQ puts without a commit can actually cause a queue manager to abend in the queue sharing group. The question I have regarding that is, should the queue manager's parameter for maximum uncommitted messages be used as a defense against that situation? And if that is so, what would be the maximum number of uncommitted messages that should be assigned in a queue manager definition? Note that here at Pershing, back in 1995, when MQ was first installed, what came out of the box was a maximum uncommitted message limit of 50,000 messages in each one of the mainframe queue managers, and we've recently only recently we've lowered that to 41,000, and we have intentions of going lower with that number in the upcoming year, 2 years. What is the recommendation by IBM, particularly for avoiding a queue sharing group manager to go, preventing a queue sharing group manager going down? What is the maximum uncommitted messages number for the queue definition for the queue manager parameter?
Your max number of uncommitted messages will control that. I think the default is 10,000, so somebody has changed that.
Yeah, it might have been back in 1995. It was out of the box. It was 50,000. And later years, maybe that number was changed to be lower. So we're still working with what came out of the box at 1995 in terms of that parameter number.
So whichever that number is, and you need to size your admin structure to be able to store that number of uncommitted messages.
So is that a part of what the input parameters would be into the CF sizer that was discussed in slide number 27?
No, I don't think so.
No, because that's not a CF sizer is not an MQ tool. It's a coupling facility tool. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it's probably you will have to do a test. And make sure that your 50,000 messages of the application that you have will fit in your admin structure.
Great. And just to repeat for clarity, what you're saying is that the current recommendation for IBM for any mainframe queue manager, any queue manager, is a maximum uncommitted messages parameter value of 10,000 is what I think I heard you say.
That's our default, and it was chosen as a safe number. Basically, it all depends on amount of free storage in your master address space, space in the complete facility in the admin structure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically resources that allow you to be able to commit or back out these sort of units of work.
Yeah, and of course we get the most transgressions against that maximum uncommitted message number via the batch processing. On CICS, we have API controls in place in the middleware level that doesn't cause the CICS business logic to bump up against that maximum number that we have set, but it's on the batch side that where it is that the transgression usually occurs, if it does occur. One last question. Slides 29 and 30 talk about SMDS. Versus the legacy DB2 being used as the part of the configuration. I suppose that's for MQ version 7.1 and higher in the future. The question I have is, I was unaware, again, I'm not on the system side, I'm on the MQ API side here at Pershing for the past 15 years, is that we're just going now. The system side of the organization is going now to MQ version 7.1. And one of the things that we were feeling very comfortable about with MQ version 7.1 regarding coupling facility queues was, from what I read in the IBM manuals last year, 7.1 would give greater resiliency to the queue managers from going down should coupling facility structures fill up, et cetera. But from slides 29 and 30, I'm getting the impression that with the install of version 7.1 is that the system group that's doing the install has the option to choose either SMDS or going with the legacy DB2 for the coupling facility shares definitions. First of all, is that true? Is my impression correct from that I got from slides 29 and 30? And my second question then, if it is true and if with 7.1, the system group here may be using the legacy DB2 definitions. Does that lower any resiliency to the queue managers from going down as a result of problem situations in 7.1?
Yeah, DB2 remains used for storing the object definition, queues, channels, all these shared objects that are used across the queue sharing group. The failure there will be that DB2 disappears, and that as long as you don't need to refer to a new object, or it will stay up, but if you make a reference or alter any object and it needs to access DB2, you will get an error. So assuming that altering or objects is not a common occurrence, the fact that DB2 failed, it might not be a...
Well, I'm not so much concerned about DB2 failing. I'm concerned about with this version 7.1 as opposed to MQ version 7.01, we were under the impression that with 7.1, the queue managers are more highly resistant to actually going down based on certain problems occurring with the queue sharing groups in the coupling facility. And
we saw in other foils slides the option to say what to do in case of failure, and the option of tolerate. So if you have that option set in your structures, if the structure disconnects or fails, some sort of corruption or damage of the structure, the queue manager is not going to terminate.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, that goes to the the core of what I was asking. Then I missed that in the slide.
It's an option that you need to enable in your structure.
Okay.
And there is another one where you can also decide to auto-recover. So if the failure occurs, you can decide, let the queue manager trigger the recover command and try to reload the contents of the structure from the log file.
And is that auto recover a parameter that's set?
Yes, as well, yeah.
Right, it's not just a reactionary parameter setting that's done at the point that there a problem does occur. It's a proactive parameter value that's set at the time that the queue sharing groups are set up.
Yeah, it's a parameter of the CFS structure.
Okay, wonderful. All right, so I think we at the API level here within the organization, the MQ API level within the organization, are going to have to maybe have a short discussion with the system people, you know, an educational discussion with the system people just to ask whether tolerate is going to be set and auto recovery is going to be set soon after the version 7.1 install here. Okay, I thank you very much for your listening to my questions and providing the answers. And in general, I thought that the entire presentation was at a very high level, very excellent.
Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Dinesh Thakur of Bank of America.
Hi, this is Dinesh. I have a question regarding the allow auto alt parameter in the CF structure. When we keep it to yes, and when the threshold, when the structure is full to the threshold, the entry to element ratio is then changed by the XCF. So during this process, when the entry to element ratio is changing, does the MQ get and MQ put API calls, I mean, this work has to wait? Is that work put on hold while this process is going on?
While the structure is being reorganized, there is a slowdown of the... Yeah, and it's all managed by the CFXCS software. So MQ noticed that the structure is not as responsive as used to be. So, yes, while the reorganization is happening, there is a slowdown.
Okay, thank you. So in this slowdown, when we say slowdown, in the sense this MQ get put will be kind of, it will take the latch.
Yeah, it takes longer.
Okay. Thank you.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. Join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Beverly and Beverly, Rick, Blanche, Greg, Mark, and Vicente, for presenting today.
This does conclude today's conference call. You may disconnect your phones at this time.